So I was holding your drink as we walked in. Are you drinking a warm Coke Zero?
Yes.
Is that a normal thing? Because that seems psychotic to me.
Well, I wanted to drink a Coke Zero,
uh-huh.
And I only have one that's warm.
Did you forget that ice exists?
Yeah, I know ice exists. You can't fit it through the little top.
Did you forget cups exist? Because it seems like this is a solvable problem.
I don't want to drink it out of a cup. I want to drink it out of a can.
Does it taste different out of the can?
Yeah.
I mean, like from the can. I get from the can versus like from a soda fountain.
I'll tell you this right now. Yeah. You don't have a mustache.
I don't.
So out of a cup, it gets into the mustache.
This is a mustache issue. Yeah. But don't you just get to like savor it later then? Like in the afternoon, you get a little extra Coke Zero.
That would be nice. All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me as always. Pastor Jim Basil.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And no Elise McCarr.
Nah. Yeah. Leaving her in the dust this week.
She's gone.
Yeah. She's actually outside. We just didn't let her in this week. She's
pounding on the door.
Come on.
Yep. But, she was late.
That's right.
We have a strict timeline.
If there's one thing Beyond Sunday is known for, it's our adherence to policy and timeliness.
Sure. You know, we got to do something. All right. I guess it's been a week from the Super Bowl. It's currently President's Day.
Yeah, this comes out on President's Day.
There you go.
It's only been a couple days for us since the Super Bowl in real time. We're still reveling in the Seahawks dismantling of the New England Patriots.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. Yeah.
They won.
I mean, I know. Yeah.
How'd your prop bets go? You're into the prop bets. I should clarify. You don't make like real financial wagers. But
absolutely
you put out for fun prop bets amongst the congregation. How'd it go?
Good. Yeah, I started doing that when I was youth director.
Yeah.
And like we'd have Super Bowl parties, and I started doing that for the kids.
Sure.
And then I slowly grew into doing it for the whole congregation.
Yeah, love this.
Yeah, I make a little sheet of all the prop bets. You can bet on length of Super Bowl halftime of the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
If Bad Bunny would have a costume change, he did not.
Yeah. Yes.
Guest appearances, he did. So.
Okay, was it any guest appearance, or did you like have prop bets on who the guest appearance would be?
From what I saw, the internets did not know that Lady Gaga and Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
So those were not like options.
Seemed like Lady Gaga was a pretty big surprise. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's not Puerto Rican, too.
Was that?
There was also some Puerto Rican celebs.
Yeah,
hanging
doing
some
out. Cameos.
Just hanging out.
Yeah.
You know?
The Mandalorian. What's his face?
Pedro Pascal.
That's the one. Yep.
And Jessica Alba.
Oh, Jessica. I didn't know Jessica Alba. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Good for her. I don't even know if she's Puerto Rican. I don't know.
You know who Jessica Alba is?
I know who Jessica Alba is. I do not know if she's Puerto Rican.
Oh, wow. But she was there, yeah.
Yes, of course. I was a...
Was she one of the grads?
I was a teenage boy in the late 90s. I definitely know who Jessica Alba is. Okay.
Touche. Yes. I'm with you on that one, yeah.
That's a given, yeah.
I want to know who the people playing the grass were.
Yeah, that's true.
That was impressive.
I did see many things of the people in grass costumes walking across the field to the Lord of the Rings soundtrack with the Ents are going to war, which I truly appreciate.
Yeah, that was good. I like
something I'm all for. All right, let's get our main topic, our thing.
Yeah.
About Ohio.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, uh-oh. Indeed.
Why is it never that you bring good news stories out of Ohio? Good things happen there. Lots of good things happen.
This is like Ohio local news. And
Ohio local
the news? Ad up front is a woman facing...
Wait. Which Ohio local news?
NBC4.
That's Columbus. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Look, up at the top is about a woman facing animal cruelty charges. So, you know, like, I'd love to find some.
Listen.
That's not our news. That's not our news.
People do animal cruelty all over the country, all right? That's not, like, unique to Ohio. That's...
I guess, unfortunately, it is not.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying.
Let's talk about alien abductions.
Alien abductions. Okay.
All right. In Ohio,
uh-huh.
You have a 1.13 chance of being abducted by aliens.
What? That seems pretty low.
Over 1 in 100? That's pretty high, I feel like.
But like out of what? Like 1.13% out of, I mean, I guess percent's always out of 100. But like, what is that?
Do you know 100 people in Ohio? When you live there, obviously.
Yeah,
I probably
still know 100 people in Ohio.
So one of them, maybe more. 1.13 of them have been abducted by aliens.
How is that in comparison to other places?
Okay, so... 4,000 abduction reports have come in since 2019. 4,000.
That does seem like a lot. That seems like too many. Ohio, what are we doing here? Okay.
So there you go. That is your ranking there. So a population of just under 12 million.
Yeah.
And so they have an alien abduction for every. But this is I think their math is wrong here.
Their mathing's not mathing.
Their mathing is not mathing. All right. Look, we got. This is what an alien analysis.
Okay.
So people assume that these reports are random.
Yes.
But when you map them out, the same states keep showing up.
Okay.
Which says more about reporting patterns than anything else. So, do you think Ohio just reports more of alien abductions, or are they more likely to be abducted?
Well,
from Ohio?
Don't think alien abductions are real. So I think we're just apparently more likely to report them. Okay. Maybe we're just more honest. We're just more willing to come forward with the stories, and other people are closeted alien abducted experiences.
Okay, maybe.
We're just more transparent about our alien abductions. It's hard to put alien abductions into a positive light. It's hard to make this seem like it's okay.
Why it gotta be an abduction? Why can't it just be a pickup? Yeah. Like, you know, like
I'm gonna hang out with it.
Yeah.
I assume it's an abduction because they did not go willingly. Like, you know, we're not getting the stories of all the people who willingly went with the aliens.
I'm just saying. Like, why has it gotta be framed that way? Why can't people just be like hanging out? Like, I didn't get abducted by my Uber driver. Like, you know, like I just got in the car.
I mean, depending, I guess.
Yeah. Like, you're just hanging out. I feel like that's putting, you know, the whole process into a bit of a bad rap.
Yeah, aliens are getting a bad name out of this. I hear that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, or maybe it's like, you know, aliens in Ohio have more of a catch and release program.
Sure.
In other states, they're more like, hey, this is a keeper.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, like,
do we have any sort of sense of what the ranking is of like Ohio versus other places? Are we like above average for states, or is this like, yeah, this is.
You are above average.
Above average. Well, we're above average. So there's that. How far above average? Like, are we an outlier? Like, what are we talking about here?
From This Is Ohio News, the 21st in state ranking, but it doesn't give me the other states.
That means there's 20 other states ahead of us. That's, okay. I mean, all right, sure, we're in the top 50%, but come on, we're not like
it does.
It
stands up for consistent reports, so you have a lot of consistency in reporting. So.
Well, we're very consistent people.
Sure. Yeah.
We really don't like change. That part I can test too.
Yeah. All right, there you go. So if you are like, hey, I'm interested in being abducted by an alien, maybe Ohio, you got to go to Ohio.
Or one of the other 20 states that are ahead of us in alien
abductions.
But
it doesn't say, This is,
I'm going to assume that Texas is ahead of Ohio, too.
I don't think so. I think our population's too high.
You think by a percentage of population there's too many people?
I think there's too many of us.
That's a fair argument. Okay.
So I think New Mexico, obviously.
Oh, for sure, because Roswell.
Is down there. Low population, too.
Yeah,
I think the Pacific Northwest is also.
I will say there was a period of time where Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio was doing a lot of testing on unknown things. There was a lot of like top secret stuff happening there. Less so now, but there was, or at least less that we know about now. But there was, and I think that probably feeds into some of this, of people holding on to this idea that Wright-Pat is like a second Roswell kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have by the way, today, I don't know if you knew, that the government like shut down air traffic over El Paso, New Mexico.
Yeah, like the airport's
for 10 days.
Yeah.
But I think now they're back open. But they said 10 days. So
I don't know.
The theories were aliens.
Sure. That's the only logical option.
Or we're invading Mexico.
Right. Yeah.
So hopefully it's not that, because we just laughed about it. Right.
I would prefer that it was alien abduction at this point.
Me too. All right, let's get our main topic.
Okay.
Let's talk about redemption
of aliens.
Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, I'm all for redeeming the aliens.
Does Jesus's death and resurrection apply to life on other planets?
That's a great question.
Is it?
I think it is.
I meant it as a joke.
No, I honestly am intrigued by it, because I am an alien believer. I think that it's very possible that we have aliens out there.
Yeah.
So do they have their own Jesus,
their own Messiah figure?
Their own Messiah figure. It's very possible, you know, like, or is one and done? Are we just the blood of Jesus transcends
for the universe,
carbon-based life forms. So, yeah.
But how would other carbon-based life forms know about our
Maybe they're not
Jesus?
Carbon-based. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
If they're not carbon-based, do you have to be carbon-based to be redeemed?
Maybe. Yes. That's finally.
I will say this too. I throw around the phrase carbon-based life forms. I don't actually know what that means.
Nor do I.
I know that's like how people describe life on Earth and like life on other planets as like a carbon-based life form, but I don't, other than we breathe out carbon dioxide, I don't know what about us makes us a carbon life form.
All right. We're going to talk about, we're here with the Christian Post.
Okay.
I don't think we use them very often.
I don't know that we've ever used them. Are they like the Washington Post or the New York Post? Because those are two very different posts.
I'm guessing closer to the New York Post.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear.
Maybe not quite as like ridiculous, okay. But equally. I think it's a more conservative news base.
Okay. So not a rag, but a...
not a rag.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. This isn't going to come out with like Redemption for Sasquatch in the Christian Post.
I think Jesus is, is Bigfoot going to be in heaven?
Yeah, maybe. Is my dog going to be in heaven?
Whew, maybe. You know, I got asked that question once when I interviewed for working at summer camp.
Yeah?
Yeah. That was like their example of like if a kid could ask you a question.
Yeah. If a six-year-old, as they're falling asleep, asks you,
what would you say?
Gonna be in heaven? Yeah. What'd you say? What was your answer?
I said no. Your dog is in hell.
Other dog, sure, but not your dog.
No, I said, heaven is perfect. And if heaven can't be perfect without your dog going to be there.
There you go.
So, that's...
But maybe heaven could be perfect without your dog.
That's unclear. I don't know. I'm just saying, if you get to heaven and you're like, this is not perfect because my dog is not here, your dog would be there.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But... I don't know. But maybe you get to heaven and you're like, I don't need my dog.
Yeah. Hopefully little Billy or Susie has grown up and isn't permanently traumatized by that answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, we're talking about Robert Morris.
Okay. Should I know who Robert Morris is? Because I do not.
He's probably not. Well, here's how you could know who Robert Morris is.
Okay. How could I know who Robert Morris is?
Well, first, President Trump's first term, he was
his, like so long ago.
He was, okay. Yeah, I know. I was such...
Granted, it was 10 years now.
Sure, I was a younger man. Yep. Oh, how innocent we were all.
I know, right? I guess 9 years, but you know.
He was President Trump's spiritual advisor.
Oh, that guy. Okay, yes. I do remember
now
that.
It's Paula White.
Right. Somehow we got weirder and worse.
Maybe not worse. Maybe worse. Probably worse theologically.
I mean, Paula White's the one who's like, openly saying, send me money so that I can like,
give you angels.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, Robert Morris was arrested for sexually assaulting a 12-year-old.
Okay, that's not great.
So, yeah, but,
to be clear, we're laughing at Robert Morris, not at...
The concept of how awful this is.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's a dark laugh.
Okay.
Well, anyway, and this this was 40 years ago.
Okay, so it happened 40 years ago, but he was arrested recently.
Yeah, and he came out recently.
Okay.
This was a big to-do about a year and a half ago-ish, maybe 2 years ago. All right, because then it became public.
Sure.
She was 12. He was like in his 20s.
Not great.
Yeah, not great. Especially because I believe when she first came forward, with some legal allegations, his lawyer came back with that it was flirtation on her part.
Ugh.
She's 12. So yeah,
she's 12.
Impossible.
Don't do that. Yeah. No.
Pretty gross. Well, he went to jail, got arrested.
Okay.
Went through the process, serving 6 months, and he's about to be released.
He did this and he only got 6 months?
It was a 40-year-old crime. I'm not saying it's right or wrong,
I'm just saying our judicial system sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. So he served 6 months, gets out.
Well, anyway, Pastor Landon Scott.
Should I know who he is?
Shot. No. He was like a protege of Pastor Robert Morris.
Love it.
Now proclaimed.
Okay.
God has forgiven Robert Morris.
Wow.
And it's going to be pretty special because Robert Morris is going to be released from prison Easter week.
Wow.
And that is about the proof of the redemption of this story.
Okay. So if he had been released on any other week, then the story is not about redemption, but... He's released on Easter, so now it's all about God's redemption.
This is what Pastor Landon Scott.
Scott.
S-C-H-O-T-T. Scott.
Scott. Scotty.
Great Scott. The day he went to jail, I was on a prayer run during my daily encounter. The Lord asked me, do you know what day it is? I checked the calendar. It was Rosh Hashanah, the Hebrew New Year, the beginning of the days of all leading into Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And the Lord spoke to me. I have forgiven him, he recalled.
Okay.
But I don't really care about Robert Morris. I mean, I care that he's a gross person.
Or Mr. Schott.
I definitely don't care about Mr. Schott. I've never heard of him before I read this article. But I was thinking through this process of like, what is redemption. Because look, I believe quite fully that our God and Jesus' death and resurrection have paid the price for Robert Morris's sins.
Yes.
And there's some theological, how does that work? There's a lot of different answers out there.
Absolutely.
One probably does not quite capture it fully.
The mechanics of it are not the important part.
But you know, we could kind of guess of like, it's kind of like this. It's kind of like a debt. It's kind of like an offering. It's kind of like a substitution. You know, it's kind of like all those things.
Just as God or Jesus says, the kingdom of God is kind of like this and kind of like that. Yeah.
It's kind of like all that. But so I don't doubt that Jesus, the blood of Jesus and his resurrection are for Robert Morris.
Right.
That he is outside, even though he's done something completely and totally heinous.
Right.
That
awful.
That it is outside of that.
Right.
I think it's just so interesting, like how quickly sometimes it seems like the Christian church can like pronounce redemption on somebody. And I'm kind of just curious, what does redemption actually look like? If you go from like, I did something heinous to I am back into the fold, to the member, you know, the community of Jesus, how does that process work? How do we get there?
Yeah.
Is it like a one-time like repentance or is it bigger?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good question. I think the one-time repentance thing, when we're talking about the redemption, and maybe we need to talk about redemption in specific categories, right? So that we have the forgiveness of God. Let's start there. Like the forgiveness of God, I think, is a one-time confession deal, right? I think, you know, we've confessed our sins, God has forgiven us, and our sin is removed as far as east is from the west, right? Which, for all of you geography non-paying attention people out there, east and west never meet, right? There's an intentionality in choosing east and west. So our sin is removed as far can be. And so I do think that's true from God. And so the question, I think what you're asking is more about how is redemption met in the community? Like, how do we live out and experience that redemption in our community here? And how do we hold people accountable as well? And that is trickier. I think we have to really wrestle with that. I do agree with your assessment, particularly in circles such as this one, which I would say is an evangelical, a more conservative circle and surrounding a well-liked, maybe even beloved pastoral figure, right? There is often, and we've talked about this before, a rush to forgiveness. They confess, they're forgiven, we can't talk about it anymore, right?
Yeah.
You can't be mad at them anymore. They confessed and God has forgiven them. And I don't think that that is biblically or theologically helpful because there are ways in which, yes, we are forgiven by God for these things, but our actions have very real consequences. And unless we're willing to repair those consequences and take actions to repair those consequences in this life or in this world, I should say, I don't think that we're inherently intended to be embraced by a community, right? So we can take an example of an abusive relationship, right? And, you know, if I am an abuser, my victim should not just come running back to me every time I say I'm sorry because I've said I'm sorry and so now you have to forgive me. Like the victim should get out of that relationship and should protect themselves until I've shown that I'm capable of behaving and acting differently. And in all likelihood, I will never be able to do that because I have a pattern of behavior and, right, that's a whole other thing. Sure. But so like the church, the community should not continue to open itself up to people who have demonstrated I'm not serious about making this change, right? I'm not serious about living differently, right? So I'm going to offer this as an example. Here at Lord of Life, I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or not before, but here at Lord of Life, we have a policy in place that's, I don't remember, what if the offender is one of us, I think is what the policy is called. But the idea is we have someone who's in Robert Morse's shoes, right? Hopefully not a pastor, but we have someone who's in Robert Morse's shoes who's been accused of a sexual crime of some kind. How do we helpfully allow them space to engage in the community and protect the community and this person, right? How do we do both of those things? Because we do believe that Lord of Life can be a place for all people to experience God's gracious act of forgiveness. And we know that there are things that we need to do to protect the individual and the community. And so we have a policy in place that makes that sort of thing more feasible. Is it easy? No, right? It involves a lot of different people playing a lot of different roles, holding a lot of responsibility. It is not an easy thing, but it is a thing that I think helps us more fully embrace the redemption of this individual. I think if the individual wants to be a part of a community, being willing to say, I know I screwed up. I understand there are actions that I'm going to have to continue to think through differently, right? And this is the way that I can engage in the community. I'm willing to do those things because this thing matters to me. I think that for me is a sign of redemption really taking hold in our life, which is, I want to be clear as a Lutheran, right? Is not the same as works righteousness.
Yeah.
Right? It's not me saying you have to do this thing to earn God's grace and forgiveness. God's grace and forgiveness is for you, right?
Yeah.
And I will declare that for you as often as need be. But to be a part of this community, we need to see that you're willing to take steps to protect yourself and to protect the community so that we can all together experience God's grace. Because otherwise, you know, your presence here could lead more people to harm as opposed to anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, like, you know, when was Robert Morris like forgiven?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2000 years ago, you yep. know, like, you know, yeah. like that was like forgiveness was pronounced from the cross and, you know, achieved in resurrection. How again?
Yeah.
A lot of ways we can describe that.
Yep.
I'm not, we can maybe that may be a future podcast. I don't know. But, it didn't necessarily have like, this is the one moment where right. he prayed this prayer, said these words,
yeah.
and then the magic of forgiveness entered his life. Now, he may have felt that forgiveness mm-hmm. from Jesus
sure.
or felt a weight lifting. That is,
absolutely.
And I hope that he has. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that sometimes we, in these situations, can even like weaponize forgiveness.
Oh,
in
yeah.
that we can say like, to people who are not quite ready
mm-hmm.
to welcome back the
prodigal son.
The prodigal son.
Yeah.
You know, with open arms,
mm-hmm.
whether they understand or can empathize with the victim. By the way, Landon, Pastor Landon Schatz had a lot of things about Robert Morris.
Nothing
about the,
that sounds right.
About the child that mm-hmm. he abused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nothing there. About her experience and all this. But for, you know, some people are like, for the sake of her and people like her, how do we, you know, do that?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to open those arms.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll never really want to.
Yeah.
And I understand and I can empathize with that. And I think sometimes when you say like, well, he, one, it was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And two, he said he was sorry.
Yeah.
And that, I think sometimes weaponizes forgiveness against victims, right?
Yeah.
Like you have to forgive them because they said they're sorry.
Which is complete and utter nonsense.
Agreed. Now, his relationship with God is
one separate.
Completely separate
yes.
of that. But with the community is very, very different.
Yeah. yeah. And so I think that's helpful. I'm going to offer two kind of biblical situations. Like one, we got into the prodigal son a little bit here, and I think it's helpful to remember we are not the father in the story.
Correct.
Right? God is the father in the story.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't a lot of parables that I would look at and say, like, this is the way to look at it, but I'm pretty confident in this one that, like, God is the father. God is the one who's able to welcome both sons.
Yeah.
And in reality, right, Robert Morris and those who are saying, like, just forgive, feel to me more like the elder son in the story, right?
Yeah.
They're the ones who are as much in need of God's forgiveness as anybody else, but they're the ones looking at others going like, well, why haven't you forgiven us? Why haven't you given me what you wanted, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's worth it, right? Like, the brothers do not have this interaction of having to figure out how to forgive one another in the story. And
yeah.
I think that is much more what we are facing here is how do we have that interaction of forgiveness?
Yeah.
Now, the second piece of that is perhaps a little bit more challenging, right? Jesus's instruction on forgiveness is that we forgive not once, not seven times, but 77 times, right? Meaning that you always forgive, you continue to forgive.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? Because I think that's where we get to your point of the church weaponizing forgiveness, right? The church saying like, oh, you have to keep forgiving him, right? You have to, that's what Jesus says to do. And yes, Jesus does say that we have to be forgiving of people, but there are also ways in which Jesus talks about handling conflict within the church, disciplining members within a community, right? Saying like, you're not going to continue to let people just beat you over, right? Like,
correct.
Like this is not the stance either. And so I think we have to be really intentional and really careful about that. And if I'm going to read the Gospels and come away from it thinking that Jesus is on the side of the people who oppressed others, as opposed to Jesus is on the side of people who have been oppressed, then I think I'm misreading the Gospel. Like
yeah.
Jesus is always on the side of the people who are lower on the totem pole. Yeah. And it's not that the forgiveness isn't for other people. It's that Jesus is always siding with the people who have been oppressed and saying, like,
yeah,
these are the people that we need to pay attention to and care for.
Agreed. All right. So let's talk about the Super Bowl.
Oh. I got this. Yeah.
Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, okay.
There were two.
There were two. I saw both of them. Well, no, that's not true. I saw one of them and clips of another.
Then me too.
Okay.
I saw most of Bad Bunny's on YouTube the next day.
There you go.
Not all of it.
We talked about this last week. Yeah. I gave myself a little pre-read of Bad Bunny's music Sunday afternoon. I was like, okay, this is interesting. And I thoroughly enjoyed the halftime show. Like, I thought it was really interesting. Did not understand 90% of it, but thought it was fascinating and was incredibly beautiful. Like, just the way it was acted, the way it was filmed, the way it was, all of it was just incredible.
The set was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was really good.
I mean,
good.
That was really, really phenomenal.
Yeah. I personally got more out of this one than I did out of last year's.
Me too. Yeah, I think it was, from a production standpoint, pretty incredible. Some of the stuff would be like, yeah, this really isn't for me, but that's okay.
Okay.
You know, like, and I watched clips of the competing Turning Point USA halftime show.
Mm-hmm.
Which we previously talked about, Kid Rock. Yeah. And so, in the show, Kid Rock gets up there,
mm-hmm.
sings his hit, probably. I mean, his most famous song.
The Ball with the Ball.
Whatever that song is.
We'll call it the hit because it's the one song we know.
It is kind of about, like, you know, seeing strippers.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's secular music.
It's not, like, his worst song, like, as far as, like, the topics that he's talking about. Like, it's not his most offensive.
And I'll say this, like, I'm not here to judge that song or even people like that song. I like plenty of songs that are about, like, you know,
I remember
scandalous things that would not be proper to sing in church.
I definitely remember singing along to it as a kid, not having any idea what I was talking about. But yeah.
And then, so Kid Rock did that.
Uh-huh.
And evidently there was, like, a sound issue or whatever, because, like, he was lip syncing and, like, it was not going well. He claimed afterward it's not, but, like, okay, whatever. It did not look good. And the crowd is cheering. They're screaming along with it. Uh-huh. Fires in the background, all these things.
Cool.
And there's, like, a set change, you know, a costume change.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes out as under his Christian name. It's not Kid Rock.
Oh, what is it? What is his Christian name?
Robert Ritchie or something.
Okay.
And
so that's, he was born Robert Ritchie?
Yes.
Okay.
Adult Robert, not Kid Rock. Yes. He matured backstage and sang, like, a gospel-ish song about Jesus giving second chances.
Okay.
You know, whatever.
Fine. Yeah.
Great. I'm all about Jesus giving second chances.
Yes. As previously established.
Totally fine.
You know, we're, like, pro-Jesus and forgiveness and,
I thought this was kind of silly, but that message is fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Like, but anyway, oftentimes, you know, the people out there are like, hey, Kid Rock has got some pretty gross stuff in his catalog.
Continues to have some pretty gross stuff in his catalog.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, I don't think he's released a new album for a couple of years, but still, some gross songs in his catalog that, even at the time, were not appropriate.
Right.
And so people...
It's not like looking back, we're like, oh, that's really rough now. It was always bad.
So the defense now is, like, this was, like, a visual representation of redemption. That Kid Rock...
He sang his old
hit,
song.
Like, that was who he was.
Uh-huh.
Then we have this costume change and sings this, and this is who he is now. And so it's like a play, you know, like, it not maybe not quite as interesting as Bad Bunny's, you know, but like, it's a
Bunny didn't have a costume change.
That's true. He did not. That was one of the things you could bet on my prop bets challenge.
Yeah.
Would he change his costume?
Though the suit thing that he was wearing was pretty boss. I liked that.
Yeah. Like, it would look like pads underneath like a suit. It was kind of interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. So would that be there? You know, like did
Kid Rock experience redemption?
Is that a redemption? What do we think about that as kind of like as a storytelling device?
I mean, I don't have a problem with it as a storytelling device. I think the problem is, are we conflating a storytelling device with actual action? And throughout history, we've told stories about people who have lived a certain way and have experienced Jesus and have lived differently afterwards.
Absolutely,
right? And I think it's different when you tell the story and say, this is what happened, this is what it was like, and maybe even like reenact some of those parts, right? Like, you know, if you're doing a life story, maybe you're acting that out in some way. But continuing to sell and make money off of the thing that you're claiming to have foregone.
Correct.
Seems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anti to the redemptive process. Right?
I think that's definitely the question. Right.
Like, yeah. It's not like he's said, like, you know what, I'm done with that, and so I'm not going to sell any of the, or I'm going to like take all the money from that and give it to a thing, or I'm not going to sell any more records of the, like, sure, I'm just done with that. I don't want to be associated with that anymore. He's saying, like, no, I'm cool selling those and making money off of it and singing those hits, and then I'm also going to do this thing. It feels performative to me, and not in a good way. It feels just like, oh, this is what appeals to the crowd now. This is going to get like that. And this is me judging from the outside, but that's what it feels like.
I would agree completely. I could say, like, I left that life behind, and yet I will put it on like a costume.
When it's convenient to me.
Go on stage, sing the same songs to the same cheers and screams of an audience, and then pretend like I've been redeemed from that old way of life. For me, again, like, that is like, I believe fully. One, if this is a redemption thing, that's even kind of true, that one day Kid Rock and I will worship Jesus together in heaven. Like, that's a thing.
Ball with the ball.
Yeah, yeah. That is God's completely within, and I have no reason to distrust his faith. But I would say, like, that is not a redemption story for me. Like, that is, that it could be faith, it could be real, but that's not a, I have been redeemed from that way of life and I'm entering into something new, when you're allowed to go back to that way of life whenever you want for the cheers of crowds and for whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Paul talks about this, right? Yeah. Paul says, you know, should we continue on sinning so that grace can abound? And Paul's emphatically responds, no. Like, the point is not to sin more so that you can experience more grace. The point is that you have experienced grace, and so it changes who you are, and you stop wanting to do those things. You stop wanting to live the way you were before you experienced grace.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that any of us are perfect at it, right? Like, I'm fully aware that there are plenty of people who have, who are sinners, right? We're all saint and sinner at the same time, right? Yeah. But to stand up publicly and proclaim this redemptive process without any acknowledgement of, here are the things that are different because of it.
Yeah.
I think we're drastically missing the point.
I agree. I think, you know, and Christians try to do this with President Trump.
Yep.
Of like, he's said the believer's prayer, yep, and he's talked about Jesus kind of in public and said things about God.
Kind of.
And yet there's been no demonstrative change in showcasing the fruits of the Spirit in his language, in his life. For me, that's not a redemption story. Again, like, President Trump could very well have, like, faith.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
The forgiveness of God is available to President Trump. Absolutely.
What is there or not. But I can say, like, if Jesus is talking about by their fruits you will know them, like, I just don't see fruit of redemption there.
Yeah, sure.
And so, like, I think that this is a thing that Christians do, is as soon as it seems like somebody is pivoting towards our team, even just the smallest, littlest amount, like, we immediately are like, they've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, and like, welcome brothers and sisters into Jesus. And I, again, elements of that are beautiful and amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we lift it up as this is the example of redemption, when it's not fully realized, I think the outside world looks at it as just like performative and hypocritical.
Yeah.
And I think there are beautiful examples of actual redemption.
Yes.
Of people actually leaving behind lives of violence and brutality and exploitation and coming into something new and truly walking away or doing their best to walk away. I mean, like, you know, any person who is in the throes of addiction, it's not necessarily a one-stop process.
Sure. Yeah.
Or, you know, like, and I think that is far more beautiful, but far more difficult to get to.
Yeah.
And that doesn't look like a celebrity sang a gospel song and then we can just pretend like 20 years didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's challenging to say because I believe in grace so fully.
Yeah.
I just don't like this performative grace.
Yeah, no, I think that's a reasonable critique because the belief in grace so fully doesn't change God's interaction with this individual, right? We're fully on board with God's grace is for this individual.
Yeah.
It is the way in which we're embodying and expressing that grace to the world that I think we're both saying is putting on a false performance of what that grace is actually supposed to be about. And so it's not that God's grace is not for you, right? Yeah. God's grace is for Kid Rock. God's grace is for Pastor Morris. God's grace is for whoever, right? God's grace is for the world. How we experience and are transformed by that grace should matter to us.
Yeah.
And it feels like in these scenarios that we're lifting up, we're not concerned about how grace transforms our lives.
Yeah.
We're concerned about performing and saying the right words, but we're concerned about God actually coming into our hearts and transforming our lives. And Lutherans, like I said before, right? We don't always talk about this well because we're terrified of works righteousness. And I get that.
Yeah.
But even Luther would say the grace of God changes who you are and how you live that out in the world. And you're always going to be a sinner, right? There are always parts of that are going to be mistaken and you're going to fall and slip into other things that you shouldn't be doing, right? He talks about that extensively. But we're also a saint, and we should always be striving for that out of the love of Christ in our hearts that changes us forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully, you know, like that it's not just like, well, you said this one prayer.
Yeah.
You publicly talked about God, or you sang a redemption song.
Jesus never tells us to say a believer's prayer.
Yeah, there's no believer's prayer in the Bible. But like a demonstrative change in life is evidence of redemption. Now, not all of us even present that evidence.
Yeah.
And not all of us... you know, you could have grown up in church and like you didn't have that one moment where like I left behind the old me and put on a new me, you know, like, and that's okay. But like, you know, like that there, we want fruit of redemption as that beautiful story, mm-hmm. not just the words of redemption as yes. that beautiful story. And I'm hopeful that we want to hold each other to this.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, again, these are major examples, but like, what is that? So what does this look like maybe in your individual life? How Oof. Do you experience redemption and this new fruit, this new person that you're putting on? I mean, like Paul is very big on this idea of like a new humanity,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
we're all becoming something new. How does that work in our individual lives?
Yeah. I mean, I think it does... I think it does force us to look at our own lives and to think through how are we interacting with everything, right?
Yeah.
This is going to come out on Monday. Wednesday is going to be Ash Wednesday. So as we're recording this, I'm thinking through my Ash Wednesday sermon. And one of the things that I'm thinking about is this idea. We hear a reading from Joel, and Joel says, rend your hearts, not your clothes. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but it's the idea. Is rend your hearts, not your clothes. And so the idea is like, don't do the performative thing, but think through how are you actually called into relationships with people, right? So rending your hearts, how is your heart being torn open for the world?
Yeah.
Right? And that's gonna make us challenge a lot of things, right? It's going to make us turn towards a neighbor we would prefer to turn away from, right? Yeah. It's going to make us rethink all of our former opinions, which doesn't mean our former opinions are all inherently wrong. But we should probably be evaluating all of them and saying, okay, what does this opinion look like through the love of Jesus? What does my opinion of an immigrant look like through the love of Jesus? What does my opinion of this person that's experiencing homelessness look like through the love of Jesus? What is my opinion of this person who's been a convicted sex offender and is a pastor and is now being released from prison? What does my opinion of that person look like through the love of Jesus, right? These things should all be filtered through the love of Jesus. I think that's how we do it on an individual basis is, everything we do, everything we talk about should be, how am I doing this through the love of Jesus? And we're not going to do it perfectly.
Sure.
But that should be the thing we're working towards, right? It should be, how am I experiencing this through the love of Jesus?
Yeah. Maybe like in American Christianity, you know, like a first step is how are you connecting to God on Sunday morning through worship and through church?
Sure.
But that's not the last step. Like then it's like, how are you connecting to God on Monday?
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of why we produce this podcast of like, how does this connection to Jesus transform every aspect of your life?
Yeah.
Like it invades every bit of you. Jesus is not satisfied with 2 hours on Sunday morning. He's like, well, you did it.
Mm-hmm.
See you next week. He truly wants to, like, and I know this is weird language, like invade every bit of you, including the parts you do not want him in at all.
Probably especially those.
Yeah. That, whatever parts those are, is like, I really don't need Jesus here, or I don't want Jesus here. He's aiming for them. And I think that's the question of like, okay, so what does redemption look in my life? I think it's beyond like, well, I go to church.
Yeah.
It's how does Jesus look at my work, my school, my family, my interactions with neighbors, when I look at my checking account, where do I see Jesus?
Yeah.
In this, where do I see Jesus in my Facebook posts? Where do I see Jesus in my car when I'm driving to work? You know, like, Jesus wants to be in every one of those aspects of who you are.
Jesus comes not to bring peace, but the sword, right? Jesus says this himself. And when he says the sword, he doesn't mean violence. He means ripping your life apart.
Sure. Right? Yeah. Like, cutting out the cancer in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Cutting out. And that's going to be divisive, right? And so, like, if Kid Rock came. Sorry, what's Kid Rock Christian's name? What's his Christian
Robert
name?
Ritchie.
If Robert Ritchie came.
I might also be wrong on that. I don't know. I read it. It's long enough.
If Richie Rich came, right? But all right, I'm going to continue to call him Kid Rock. If Kid Rock came and said, like, this is the transformation that I've had, and these are the pieces of my life that are being cut out because of this transformation, like, I'd be like, okay, like, I'm in. Like, I want to hear that story. I want to hear how Kid Rock is not going to do any or perform any of the songs that have made him millions of dollars over the year. I want to hear how this caused a rift between him and his family because his family was relying on, and like, he, I don't know, right? I don't know what that looks like, but I want to hear that story. I don't want to hear the story of, well, I got up here and I did this costume change and everybody cheered for me, so I guess I can keep doing that and I can go on tour and other people will pay me money to keep doing that. It's not an interesting story, and it doesn't feel like a story in which someone's being transformed by the love of Jesus.
Sure.
And I want to hear stories about people being transformed by the love of Jesus.
Agreed.
Which is why I read the Bible.
All right.
Not the only reason I read the Bible. It is a reason I read the Bible.
Yeah.
If I'm going on about reasons that we read the Bible, does that mean we've reached the end?
I think so.
Okay. Well, hey, if you enjoyed what you heard today, you can find all of our stuff at BeyondSundayPodcast.com. Oh, wait, no. Hold on. New thing.
Whoa.
BeyondSundayPodcast.com, it does still exist. You can still go there. But we are now hosted on the Lord of Life website. So you can go to loltwtx.org and you can find our website there, and you can find all of our podcasts. Our full backlog of 370-something, 380-something episodes is there.
That's a lot.
I don't think you can get all of them on Apple. I think Apple like only puts up the last 100 or something like that. So if you're
if you're a completionist.
Yeah, if you're going back, you're like, I want to get the full canon of Beyond Sunday podcast, right? You can do that on our website. Yeah, obviously. you can get that all on our podcast or all on our website, LOLTWTX. But if you go to BeyondSundayPodcast.com, at least in the interim, it is still going to redirect you to the place where all of our podcasts are now being hosted. So that's exciting and new. And you can still send us an email at BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com and tell us your redemption story. We'd love to hear that.
Yeah, all right. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.